Welcome to Federal Sense with your friendly HR guy.
Hello, this is your friendly HR guy again. Got my first email with a question. It says, HR guy, I'm not a new supervisor, almost 10 years experience, but I just got promoted to branch chief back in June. I have three teams in my branch, each with a team supervisor. I spend most of my time working with my three subordinates to get the branch working the way I want. I feel like I get a lot of resistance whenever I make a change or question a practice that seems weird to me. I came from a sister branch that basically did the same work as my new branch, just for a different sector. I was surprised how different this branch handles the same kind of work. I know I can increase our metrics if they would just change a few things. My relationship with my three managers has become a little contentious. All of them are quick to argue with me about any changes I want, or the slightest note of constructive criticism. How do I get them motivated to improve? And I'll just give you initials. I'm guessing it's a woman, that's one of those names, but Gigi, I'll just use her initials. So it sounds like we got a question about a second line supervisor. This is interesting because I get this a lot too, where a second line supervisor calls me with kind of questions about managing our supervisors, and it just dawns on me that they have no idea that being a second line supervisor is different than being a first line supervisor. Managing line staff is one thing. Managing supervisors is a whole different kind of thing. And, you know, this is a good question of you're trying to motivate your managers to do it your way. I would argue that that's not your job. You know, the motivation is, they already have the motivation. You know, their supervisors, their PMAP, you know, it should be tied to the metrics. And, you know, awards and all that other stuff, you're not going to motivate them more than is already there. I think the trick with being a second line supervisor is not to micromanage them and not to motivate them to the way you want to do it. It's to step back and allow them to demonstrate and perform, and then you critique the results. That's, as a second line supervisor, you should have that 30,000 mile, you know, view. You shouldn't be in the thick of it, you know, making daily changes or looking at operations and getting involved, because you get so down to the nitty-gritty, you can't see the whole picture, and you end up missing a lot of things. And I think this is the big culture shock managers have when they go from supervising line staff or a team to being a branch chief. And there are different names for it, but branch chief, where you're over supervisors, you're now dealing with a whole branch, a bigger team. You can't tell your supervisor how things should be done. You just tell them what you want. You know, I want this metric improved. Yeah, you can give them your ideas. You know, hey, this is how I did it, you know. But forcing them to do it your way, you're not going to get your results. You know, a second line supervisor should tell them what you want, and that's what the PMAP is. That's you telling them what they want, standing back, and then evaluating the results. Because if they get the results their way, then so be it. You really shouldn't be, you know, dictating how they get their results. That's, you know, you're pretty much, you're not empowering your supervisors, and that's not going to get you what you want. You've got to empower your supervisor to succeed, and when they fail, you can address that. Reach out to your HR guy, and he'll help you with performance. But I see this question as someone who is a brand new second level and doesn't realize that you don't keep doing the same thing you were doing as a first line supervisor. You have to change your entire culture, the entire way how you do business. You are now looking at the entire branch, and you are the liaison from that branch to the higher up you know, executive area, and that's where you should be doing your business. Just tell your supervisors what you're looking for. This is what I want. If you know, in meetings they don't know how to get that, give them suggestions. But you know, I think it's the wrong move to dictate how to do specific things. Because if you're not going to empower and challenge your managers, then hell, why you even have them? Like, you're wasting, you know, a six-figure salary for just somebody that's just going to follow your instructions. I think that's a waste, but that's going to kill morale. And it sounds like the, you know, what do you say, the contentiousness when you, about the change in the slightest note or of constructive criticism. It's like, that's my thing is, you criticize the results. Don't criticize constructive criticism. You know, don't give them constructive criticism on how they're doing it or what they're doing. You give them constructive criticism on the results. So at the end of the quarter, at the end of the month, whatever your metrics are, you comment on the metrics. You know, hey, this number is bad or this is unacceptable, or, you know, hey, how can we get this better? That's what you address. Don't tell them how to get it better. You know, it's good that you were successful in a similar job, but you've got to have it be their idea. You're not going to get their buy-in as a supervisor if you just dictate how to do everything, because then they have no authority, and without a confident supervisor, they're going to do their job very poorly when they feel they can't dictate it. How this work is done, and that will bleed through to the first line staff when they're presenting a change that you've given that, yeah, it's successful. They're presenting that change. The first line staff is going to understand this isn't them, that you're the one doing it. They're not going to be on board. You're not going to get their buy-in. Your supervisor then just becomes a mouthpiece for you, and morale just slowly crumbles. I've seen this before. The trick is you tell your managers what you want them to do, and then you stand back and get out of the way. Here's another thing. If it can be delegated to one of your supervisors, you should delegate it to your supervisor. I think a big problem with new second line supervisors is they have this guilt of not having the work they're used to. You know, they're used to being busy all day long. You know, usually most of the supervisors are working supervisors, so they have their own caseload. You know, they're that QC of all this work, and they're just used to being so busy. They become second line supervisors, and suddenly you have three very experienced people under you, and the work just isn't, the quantity of work just isn't there. And so you have this guilt, and I've seen second line supervisors like divvy up work to themselves and take on things because, you know, oh yeah, you're busy, you do that, I'll take care of that, I'll take care of this report or this part of the office. The problem is now you're so busy you can't do what your actual job is, and that is monitoring and QCing the whole branch and how it integrates into the bigger picture of the mission of the agency. So the trick is, if it can be delegated to a different supervisor, you need to delegate it. And when one of your, if you have multiple managers, if one of them is off, you don't act for them. The other manager acts for them. So don't act down for your managers. I see this a lot where, you know, yeah, your managers are busy, and when one's on vacation, I've seen the second line supervisor step in. They get way too involved in the branch and those teams, and they interfere in a way that you end up sucking the authority from the room. And then when that manager is there, when they return, their authority is pretty much gone because you've stepped in and fixed things and all this other stuff. So if it can be delegated, delegate it down to those line managers and put everything on them. That's going to allow you to evaluate the entire branch, spot checks, audits, you know, running reports, looking in shared drives to see if things are being organized correctly. That is the proactiveness of a second line supervisor. Instead of doing your quote unquote fair share, and then you're so busy you don't have time to do quality control, you know, spot checks, any of that stuff that pops up that you need to take care of, or, you know, preventative measures to ensure that, the branch is doing what it needs to do. And that's that anxiety new second line supervisors have, where they want to do their fair part, and they're so used to being so busy. But the truth is, being in that meeting with the executives or the, you know, the directors and deputy directors, and you know, being the advocate for your branch, that's now your job. And when they ask you a question, you need to already have the answer, and you can't do that if you're acting for one of your supervisors, or if you're, you know, doing some kind of task that could have been delegated down to one of your supervisors. Don't be afraid to say, no, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm assigning this to you. Don't be afraid to do that. You're the second line supervisor. They have no idea what your responsibilities are, and that's none of their business. That confident indifference, you need to double it when you become a second line supervisor, because you're now supervising supervisors. And guess what? They probably put in for that job and did not get it. And the reason they didn't get it, you know, going by Gigi's email, is probably because her team was doing better. And there, you know, she's got the winning, you know, successful way of doing it. Great. I would love it that they would respect that and you know, want your ideas. But the problem is, they're probably pissed off they didn't get the job. They think they're better than you, and that you're going to have to fight. Part of combating that anger and that passive aggressive bullshit you get when you get a job that someone else doesn't is, you know, assigning them work, holding them accountable, and then stepping back and allowing them to impress you, allowing them to show off that my way works. And then when it doesn't work, you address that performance and you say, hey, this isn't working. Here's how I did it. And if they don't improve, reach out to your HR guy. There's things you can do. But jumping in and just dictating the changes, then what's their job and what are they doing? And that's the problem being a second line supervisor, is your job has changed, and it takes a long time for people to kind of understand that. And I've gotten invite requests for the manager and the first line supervisor and the second line to talk about an employee relations issue of one of the line staff. And the first thing I do is tell the second line supervisor, hey, if this ends up being a discipline, you're going to be the deciding official. I need you to get off this meeting because I need you to stay impartial. So I will work with the first line and go from there. But that's the beginning of every one of those little, you know, group meetings where the second line is just way too involved. You shouldn't be involved. You should be looking at this at 30,000 feet, not getting in, you know, it becomes a team sport. That's not how this works. So I saw this question. I was like, ooh, this is perfect, because we can now talk about second line supervisors, and, you know, you're just as new and in a culture shock as the brand new first line supervisor. Your whole job has changed, and you've got to figure out how how your new mission and how your new responsibilities, how you're going to, you know, do your business and have that your management style doesn't change. It's just, you aren't the manager now. You're the second line supervisor, and that is just a different way of doing things. Hope this made sense. I think I made the point I was trying to make. I like this question. She's probably hating my answer, because how do I get them motivated to improve? You give them a 2, or if you're at the DOD, you give them a 1, or you counsel them or give them a performance deficiency notice that I'm gonna give you a 1 because of this metrics. That's how you motivate them. That's the answer, Gigi. I know that's not what you want, but step back and let them do it. And if they're not going to listen to your great ideas, that's you know, they're going to regret it, because they're about to get a 1 and maybe a PIP or an ODAP, depending on what your agency calls it. And that's how you motivate them, you know, and you're not going to motivate that. They're never going to admit you're better at this job than they are. They're never going to admit it. Stop trying to convince them that you're better. Just manage them and stand back and critique the results. That's the trick to that. So hope this helped. That was a good question, but I know I'm pissing her off, but that's fine. All right, everyone have a good one. Bye.
Have a question for the HR guy? Send it to federalsense@gmail.com.